Good evening. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, July 27, 2008. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. You are about to listen to The Antidote to Popular Talk Radio. During our live broadcast this evening, please, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or you can email your comments to comments at libertytalkradio.com. If you are listening to this as a rebroadcast or through our archives, you may also phone in your comments to 918-919-0101. We also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. This is probably a time that we should be doing that and knowing where we're going and what we're doing with our money. Things seem to be very tenuous these days. I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by listening to our website, by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Folks, this evening, I am pleased to announce that we have the dynamic Wayne Allen Root as our guest. Wayne is a libertarian vice presidential candidate running with Bob Barr. This should be a very high-intensity interview that I am truly looking forward to. Please call in 646-652-4620 with any of your questions or your comments. As in the interest of full disclosure, I will admit that I did vote for Wayne Allen Root to be the presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. He almost made it. My wife voted the same way. I think he's an excellent candidate. I think he'd do a wonderful job as a vice president. We seriously ask you to take a good look at them. These are the men we need in office right now. And I think after Bob Barr serves a term or two, Wayne Allen Root will take over. And this is what we need. Wayne will be calling in any minute now. So please, if you have any questions, 646-652-4620. Please call in with your questions. Surprised he hasn't called in yet. We should be receiving his call any second now. Folks, please stay tuned to what is going on with the financial situation here in the United States. It seems we had another bank go under. I believe it was somewhere in the middle part of the United States. It's now being reopened in the next couple of days. There's the SEM Group here in Tulsa that just is gone under, and they're behind the ball for about $29 million. They got involved in financing. Folks, things are very, very difficult out there. We do ask you to look at what you have as far as your portfolio, retirement is concerned, and consider putting your money into some solid assets and some, assets that won't waste in an inflationary environment. Still waiting for Wayne Allen Root to call in. No one's calling in yet. Wayne, where are you? You're usually early. Right? Now, he will be calling from his home in Las Vegas, Nevada. Wayne is a real free marketer. He made his money on online gambling in Vegas, and he's a true entrepreneur. He's a fun guy and probably the most dynamic person that I have ever met in my life. He is just a joy to listen to. I understand he takes 100 vitamins a day just to keep himself going. I don't have it now. Hold on one second, please. He's still not calling in. Wayne, where are you? I do not want to sit here and sing this evening. I do want you to call in. Well, while we're waiting for him, both him and Bob Barr are taking a very libertarian approach. We do have a few questions for him. Oh, here he is right now. My glad he's here. He's going to save me some time.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Wayne, thank you for calling in. Okay, I just finished. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's my pleasure to be on your show tonight.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you. I hear your voice and for you to be on our program this evening. I was just telling the our audience that you are probably the most dynamic person that I have met in my life, and it's a real pleasure. And then in the interest of full disclosure, my wife and I did vote for you at the Libertarian Convention for the presidency, but you got the vice presidency. We'll settle for that now, okay?
Hey, thank you, Joe. That's a wonderful thing to say, and what a great way to start an interview. You've put me in a wonderful mood. It's nice to hear that people appreciate the hard work I'm doing and the effort I put forth.
Right. Well, we want you to know, and I have to be honest with our audience, is that we not only support you on our radio program, but we also support you financially, and we do ask our listeners to do the same.
Great. And let me give you the website as we start this interview, because
surely,
if they want to do the same, that's the way to do it. You go to BobBarr2008.com, BobBarr, B-A-R-R, 2008.com, or RootForAmerica.com, Root, R-O-O-T, 4, F-O-R, America.com.
Very good. Wade, why don't we start this interview by giving us an update as to what has transpired since the nomination. What progress have you made? What are some of the obstacles that you're facing now, and how you're going to overcome those obstacles? So why don't you just give us a little brief history of what's been going on?
Well, the progress, Joe, is obvious. The progress is that no other libertarian ticket has gotten this type of high-profile attention from the media. No other libertarian ticket has ever pulled anything close to 6% in the Zogby polls, and double digits in New Hampshire, 9% in Nevada, where I live, but overall across the nation, 6%, heading for 7%, which is 6 to 7 million votes. At this point, early in the process, we have just barely gotten started, just barely got up off our feet, and we're already a legitimate third-party ticket, and I think that comes from a tremendous effort by Bob Barr and Wayne Root. I'm on 4 to 8 radio stations every single day around the country. A lot of libertarians probably don't know, because when a guy like me is on in, you know, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and Bismarck, South Dakota, and Los Angeles, California, and Mount Vernon, New York, and you do all of these different cities, unless you're in that city listening to that station at that moment, you don't know that Wayne Root is doing all this. But, you know, when you think about who and how many people and how many voters and what you could accomplish and how many people you can reach when you do 8 radio shows a day, between now and the convention, I may do, now in the election, November 4th, I actually could reach over 1,000 radio programs. Millions of people will hear the libertarian message. And then Bob Barr doing the high-profile media, you know, every minute you look, he's on Glenn Beck, he's on Fox News, he's on George Stephanopoulos, he's on Colbert Report. You know, it's something we've never had before in the Libertarian Party. So I think, you know, we've come a long way, baby, as Virginia Slim Ads used to say.
Yeah.
And if you noticed, a week ago, Time Magazine had a huge story on libertarianism in America. I almost have to laugh. I'm so giddy as I talk about all this. You know, the whole story was about how Libertarian Party is going mainstream and America is going libertarian. That's how they ended the 4-page story and big article about Wayne Root and Bob Barr, and they coined a phrase for my form of libertarianism. They called it suburban libertarianism. I'm kind of proud of that, because I made the point to him, you know, you don't win elections by being extreme. You win elections by appealing to suburban men and women who have 2 kids and a picket fence. That's what we have to get our message out to.
That's great. How has the reception been from your perspective thus far?
Well, you know, what's funny about the reception? It's much better in mainstream America than it is sometimes among your own libertarians. You know, I love the Libertarian Party and I love libertarians, but sometimes they expect this purity. You've got to be, you know, perfect in every message. It's got to be exactly what they think. But, you know, exact purity gets us 300,000 votes in the national election. Right. I'm trying to get us enough votes to either win an election, or if that's the impossible dream at the moment, and I'm really dreaming too high about winning, then certainly my fallback position, my worst case scenario, Joe, is getting in the vicinity of 10 to 15 million votes. as many as Ross Perot got. He had 19 million actually in 1992, and our campaign manager for Bar Root is Russ Verney, Ross Perot's campaign manager in 92 and 96. I mean, my fallback position is getting 10 million or more votes and building a foundation so 4 years from now, 8 years from now, 12 years from now, we could actually win an election. And the reception has been unbelievable in mainstream America. I mean, talk radio is mostly conservative. It certainly isn't libertarian. Right. It's mostly conservative. Correct. Republican talk radio.
Right.
And so when you talk about putting Wayne Root on 4 to 8 stations a day, you know, I'm mostly conversing with the Rush Limbaughs of the world on a local basis.
Right.
You know, each city has their own Rush Limbaugh, and you would think they would hate me, and you would think they would fight me, and they would think that we're
votes
from the GOP.
Yes.
No, they love me. It's been fantastic. They all take calls from the public, and none of the calls are ever staged. I mean, I don't even know what city I'm in half the time. They call me, and I'm like, where am I? And I go, look, I'm in Gillette, Wyoming. I'm in Kansas City, Kansas. And we do the interview, and they say, listen, we were supposed to have you on for 5 minutes. You're so good. Could you stay for another couple of segments, and the next thing you know, I'm on for 40 minutes. And they're
great.
Going, let's take calls. And every single caller says, where have you been my whole life? You're fantastic. My God, I've never heard someone like you. You're my exact philosophy. See, when it's spoken about or communicated correctly, I believe libertarianism really is America,
mainstream
America.
Correct.
They get scared off, you know, when you bring up heroin and legalizing drugs.
Right.
I don't bring it up. They get scared off when we say so many different things. I just talk about the things that we have in common that are popular, and I hope during the show tonight you allow me to talk about them.
Oh, please.
Because they are winning over America.
Yeah. On what about the liberal radio stations? Are you getting about the same type of reception as you do with the conservative radio stations? Is it about equal?
Well, I'm not sure where you find liberal radio stations. I mean, I've been booked on all these stations, 100 plus since the convention, and they're all conservative talk radio. I'm not quite sure where you find liberal radio in America. It doesn't seem to be out there. But I can only tell you, I don't think I've been on a liberal station. So if I was, I'm sure, as I try to tell libertarians all the time, they'll love our philosophy when it comes to social issues. They would probably hate our philosophy when it comes to fiscal issues. And there's not much you could do about that. Conservative radio, I know one thing, the only issue that matters to conservatives is the economy, the economy, the economy, taxes, taxes, taxes. And we win every time on that issue.
That's great.
Because we're more conservative than John McCain and the Republicans are those issues. We're the real conservatives when it comes to fiscal and economic issues, and they're not. So we win over Republican voters, and I think they're willing to change votes for the right message.
Do you mention in your dialogue that, in fact, the Libertarian Party is, in fact, the Republican Party that hasn't left the people?
Yeah, I talk about it all the time.
Okay.
Actually, you know what I choose to talk about? I don't want to dwell too much about Republican because, you know, of course, there's some people that will say, well, don't you want to get Democratic votes? Yeah, I do. So I try not to dwell too much in that. I talk about the fact that, yeah, I'm a Barry Goldwater disciple, so is Bob Barr. So is Ron Paul. The roots of the Libertarian Party were founded in 71 from former, you know, kind of radical Republicans who loved Barry Goldwater and couldn't stand the way the Republican Party was headed, and they turned out to be right. And so we feel the party left us. We didn't leave it. But I talk more about the Nevada model because I just happen to be lucky enough to be from the greatest state in America, Nevada. And Nevada happens to have no state income taxes, no business income taxes, no inheritance taxes, very light property taxes, which are limited by law, and it also happens to be a state that doesn't judge your personal life. You know, people can basically do what they want in their own bedroom in Nevada, and nobody bothers them. And I think that, you know, not judging morality, that's called freedom, and that's called libertarian thought. And it's no coincidence, by the way, that we have no taxes, because when you don't judge people's freedom and people are allowed to do what they want to do, but you tax it, meaning sin taxes, which people are happy to pay, then all of a sudden, guess what? You're left with much lower taxes for the average person on the street. So our system works, and I want to bring it to the whole country. I want to make the whole United States and then Nevada. I want to make the Nevada the model for everyone. I want free economic system, and I want freedom in the way of personal freedom in your bedroom as well. And we're the Libertarian Party that can bring you economic freedom, personal freedom. We leave your wallet and pocketbook alone, and we leave you alone in the bedroom too. And I think that's a message, at least so far it's proven to be a message, that on talk radio across America, people are responding wildly in a fantastic way too.
Well, that's great. That's, yeah, and I'm you re-energize me. We did.
That's
get
my job, Joe. That's what I do. I get people excited for a living. That's what I do.
You know, and Bob Barr comes across sincere. You know, he's a great speaker. He's a great spokesman, by the way. Could you teach him to smile for me?
Yeah, I know. I've heard it 1,000 times. You know, we're all a little different. You know, I'm the enthusiastic guy who never stops smiling. And if you take my smile and you divide it by two, me and Bob even out to a good smile. So I think that'll help out a bit. But here's the thing. You know, here's what Bob brings to the ticket that I can't bring. You know, I think what's great about my message is that I'm the anti-politician. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a lobbyist. I'm a small businessman. I'm a homeschool dad. I'm a citizen politician from the unique state of Nevada, nowhere near Washington. I've never stepped foot in Washington, D.C. other than a day to visit, you know, to visit. I've never worked there. I don't collect checks there. And I think people love that message. It resonates. But the fact is, if that's who you really are, it's much better off that I'm the VP and the candidate I'm running with is actually a former congressman who knows how to get something done in Washington. Because, you know, when you're too much of a rebel like I am, you know, I wouldn't even know what to do if I got elected. I've never served. I don't know how to make a bill pass. Right. I don't know how to stop a bill. You know, so it's great to have the guy who hates Washington, the anti-politician, combined with the guy who's actually been there and knows how to get things done. I think that's what's good for us. And he certainly brings credibility where I bring excitement. So I think between the two of us, we've got a real nice message for the American people.
Right. We received an email from PJ in Alliance, Nebraska, and he says, please ask Wayne Allen Root what sort of goals the campaign needs to accomplish in order to be included in the national debates, and how close are they to accomplishing these goals. Aside from winning, I think being included in these debates would, without doubt, be the single greatest accomplishment of the Barr Root 2008 campaign. Keep up the good work. Let freedom ring.
Well, I agree with PJ, and I never answered one of the first questions you asked me. Had kind of a part two, and the part two was, how are things going, was part one, and part two was, what are the challenges? And the challenges and the realities tie in with PJ's question, because having 6% right now is fantastic, 6 to 7 million votes, and it's early, we're just getting started, so that's great. The bad news is, you got to get 15% in the polls leading up to the presidential debates and vice presidential debates to get in. And they set that bar that high just to keep people like us out. Right. That's what Republicans and Democrats do. And it's not even like you got to get 115 somewhere, like in Zogby. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that it's you've got to get 15% steadily in several polls leading up to the event. And that's the problem. It's very hard to achieve that. A third party, you know, almost finds it impossible to achieve that. However, we could get invited without getting in, without getting 15% in the polls. Let's say we're at 10, and Barack Obama's people believe that we are very helpful to him because we're pulling away from Republican voters, away from McCain, more than Democratic voters. Barack may say, we got to get this guy in the debate. Let's have Bob Barr in there. And Wayne Root in the VP debate. That'd be good for us.
Yeah. Now, once he says that, McCain can't say no, because if he does, then he's the dead horse in the race.
Well, he could say no, Joe. But on the other hand, what I would guess he'd say to keep from looking like a guy who's trying to exclude us and say no is he'd say, well, I'll let them in if you let Ralph Nader in. Because, of course, Nader will pull more from the Democrats than the Republicans. And when that happens, then Obama may say, well, that's okay. Nader's pulling 2%. Barr's pulling 10%. Let's let them both in. I'm not afraid of anybody. And then he looks like the magnanimous one, and everybody goes forward. And we could still wind up in these debates. But I'm just pointing out, because I'm both enthusiastic and I'm also a guy who deals with realism, it's a long uphill battle. No question about it.
Yeah. Now, when is the next debate going to take place that I guess it'll be the first debate that takes place, isn't it?
The first debate. It's in September, and it involves YouTube. I believe it's the YouTube debate. And so far, they actually have set the number at 10%, not 15%, for that first debate.
Okay.
It's always been 15. So if Bob and I can move from 6 to 10, we got a real shot of getting in this. Fear, knowing Republicans and Democrats and how corrupt the system is, and as much as they seem to hate each other, Obama and McCain, I swear to you, they're partners in crime. They don't hate each other when it comes to us. They love each other, and they join together to keep us out. So, you know, once we get to 10, watch. They'll change the number. They'll decide it's supposed to be 15. You know, I just don't trust them. So we'll see what happens. We're aiming for it. We got a great shot at it. It's a good ticket this year, the best one we've ever had, I guarantee you that. And we will build a foundation that is the best Libertarian Party's ever had and attract more votes than we've ever had and have a shot in a couple of states like Alaska and Wyoming and Montana and Idaho. You know, we're gonna raise some hay, and we're going to prove, if we can get 10 million votes, what an important voting block we've got behind us for the rest of all time. That's, you know, we've been ignored because we bring 300,000 votes nationwide. No one cares about that.
Right.
But can you imagine if we bring 10 million? And let's just say in 2 years, and I'm not promising this, but let me just say this as a maybe. Let's just say in 2 years, Wayne Root, with his big mouth and his very big notoriety in the state of Nevada, let's just say I run against Terry Reid for U.S. Senate and pull off a Jesse the Body Ventura upset, and we not only got 10 million votes in a presidential election, Wayne Root knocks off the majority leader of the United States Senate and gets elected as a third-party U.S. senator from the state of Nevada.
Right.
Let's just say that happens.
Yeah.
You think maybe things will have changed for the Libertarian Party?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it looks like you have more than one avenues to take after this election, regardless of what the results might bring at this point.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, one of the reasons I say none of this is written in stone, carved in stone, I've had an awful lot of people speak to me, call me, write me, email me, and say, you got to be the next mayor of Las Vegas. You are going to take over for Oscar Goodman, aren't you? And I probably could win that race. That's a real winnable race for a third-party candidate. The trouble is, so that's a possibility, Senate's a possibility. These are all things I'm thinking about. Right now, I'm mostly thinking about Vice President of the United States,
right,
because I'd love to live at the Naval Observatory. But having said that, Joe, here's the issue that's always going to be an issue for me. I am a citizen politician. I do run a small business, and I do have a very young family. I have a brand new baby, plus a 4-year-old son, 8-year-old son, daughter who's still 2 years away from college. So I've got 4 kids, 3 of them, you know, under the age of 8. And it's very tough to run for these offices unless you're willing to run full-time and not see your family and not be around to run your business.
Right.
So it kind of all depends on whether my wife, you know, says thumbs up or thumbs down,
right,
whether the family votes and agrees that I should do it, or whether they, you know, they want me to be around and not be out. That would be the only thing standing in my way. I'd love to do all these things. And I certainly have a lot of plans in the future, but it's going to come down to family and business. And unfortunately, what's wrong with our whole country is these arrogant, lifelong politicians, career politicians, career bureaucrats. I'm not like them, you know? I think the beauty of my message is I want to go to Washington for 8 years. I can't stand the town. I don't even want to leave Nevada. But I'll go to Washington for 8 years. I want to give the power back to the people. I want to spend 8 years giving away my power so that Bob and I are unimportant. How about that one? We want the people to be important and the president not to be all omnipotent. And then when 8 years are up, I want to go back home to my family,
right,
and my business and never run for office again.
Yep.
And that's the difference. And that's a tough thing to rationalize in your mind, whether it's, you know, are you going to give up your business for that? Are you going to give up a year with your family for that? When you're not a person who really loves politics, you're really a person that wants the people to have their power back, but you're
right,
not a politician,
right,
you know? And that's why politicians run, because they're power hungry, and they're willing to give up their families, and they're willing to give up a business. All they know is a taxpayer-funded paycheck. I've never had one in my life, and I don't really want one, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
So those are the conflicting things when you're a citizen politician.
How are you doing with the, and I know this is going to be a very difficult question to answer, or maybe it's not answerable at all. You know, Ron Paul still has a tremendous following. In fact, they're going to have some sort of altered convention and all this other stuff that's going on. They are fanatics. Do you have any feel as to whether or not the Ron Paul supporters, which are in the millions, will come over to the Bob Barr Wayne Root campaign?
Well, I just don't know yet, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, we have 6% in the polls. The question is, where's that coming from?
Yeah.
And you know, they don't tell you that. Zogby doesn't say they're coming from Ron Paul people or they're coming specifically from, you know, John McCain people. All that so far I've seen is that about 60%, about 6 out of 10 of our votes come from Republicans, and about 4 out of 10 do come from Democrats. And I'm very hopeful we'll draw pretty well from both sides, but I do think it's obvious we'll draw better from the Republican side because Bob and I are both fiscally fairly conservative, and Bob and I are both well-known as former Republicans. So I think most of our votes will come from the Republican side, but that 60-40 split is pretty fair, and that's a lot of Reagan Democrats were drawn away too. That's kind of who I think we'll get, is blue-collar Democrats who can't stand McCain but would never vote for Barack Obama, and they all voted for Hillary in the Democratic primary. Now they got no one to vote for, and I think they'll come over to our side. So I'm not sure, you know, it doesn't tell me if it's Ron Paul people or not, but I don't see where else Ron Paul people can go. You know, if they vote for McCain, they're voting for bigger government and more wars, so they'd have to be crazy to vote for McCain.
Oh, no, they wouldn't They wouldn't vote for McCain, neither Obama.
No, and if they vote for Obama, they're crazy because he's a socialist. I mean, that goes against everything Ron Paul believes in.
Right.
And then you say, well, what about Chuck Baldwin? And I'm sure Chuck's a really nice man, and if I had him standing in front of me, we'd probably be good friends. But Chuck Baldwin's a minister. And, I mean, you talk about the opposite of the message of libertarians and Ron Paul.
Right.
If you want less government, the last thing you want is religion being stuffed down the throat, you know, in the name of government. Or I should say government being stuffed down your throat in the name of religion. So he believes in a lot of big government things that I don't think any libertarian or any Ron Paul fan could possibly believe in. Very nice man, and I think probably on fiscal issues agrees completely with Ron Paul, with Wayne Root, with Bob Barr. But I know he doesn't agree on social issues. Matter of fact, you know my background is Vegas and gambling, and I talk about sin taxes helping to pay all the other taxes, so we're all less taxed and less government. Well, I've seen quotes from Baldwin saying that he would like to end all gambling in the United States of America. Well, my gosh, you think that's libertarian? You think that's freedom? That's stuffing religion down people's throats and deciding the morality of all of us, and that's the opposite of what you get with me. I think what's great in what you get with me is I'm the straightest man that ever lived in the world. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I've never done a drug. And to be honest, even though my background is in the gambling business, I really don't gamble very much either. And I've never gambled to get myself in trouble, and I know there are people that do, and I think they're out of their minds. And I know there's people who are problem gamblers. I admit that, problem drinkers, problem druggers, problem smokers. I just don't think it's the government's business to tell any of us whether we can do it or not. See, I'm a libertarian, but I'm also a very moral guy. I think what's right for my family, I'll worry about that. I'll tell them every day, don't drink, don't smoke, and don't get involved in any bad, you know, any bad stuff. But you know what? I don't think that's what's right for every other family, like the one living next door to me.
That's
I don't
right.
think it's any of my business to tell them what to do, and that's where I become libertarian. I think religion's a good thing. I don't think government has a right to impose it on anybody else. If you don't want your daughter to get an abortion, if you don't want somebody to be married because they're gay, well, then tell that to your own family. But I don't think you have a right to make laws that enforce it on the rest of us.
Right. Now, have you received any slack or feedback or negative comments regarding your profession and whether or not you are qualified to represent the United States because you're in the gambling business? Have you received any of that? Now, I don't think that way, but I'm just...
Very little. Always at the beginning of interviews, everybody kind of brings up, well, you're from Nevada, Las Vegas, and your background is you're a famous guy. You're a celebrity who gives people information, basically sells people your advice on who's going to win and lose football games, and that makes you a vice presidential candidate. And I say something to him that kind of shuts everybody up, and that's the end of it. I say, you know what, I'm proud to be from Nevada. And if you would like the same lawyers and lobbyists to run the country that have been running it, that are Republicans and Democrats, like Barack Obama's a lawyer and Clinton's a lawyer and McCain is a guy who's collected a government paycheck basically his whole life, if that's what you want, the same people who have been screwing up the country for the last 50 years, well then go ahead. But here's the thing. Do you know what the difference is between Vegas and Washington, D.C.? I say this on every radio show.
I've heard this before, but please tell for the sake of my audience, please.
The difference is, Joe, in Vegas, the drunks gamble with their own money.
No, I love that
and
line.
In Washington, D.C., of course, I don't need to give you the punchline. It's obvious, but I'll say it anyway. In Washington, D.C., the drunks gamble with your money, the taxpayers' money. And so by electing me, you don't have to be scared. I'm from a state where we give you a fair shot. When you come to Nevada, nobody fixes a single game in this state. It's all fair and square. You may not win most of the time, but you have a shot to win. But when you go to Washington with those thieves and prostitutes, you've got no shot to
win.
You know, in Nevada, prostitution's legal, but it's fair and it's honest. In Washington, prostitution's legal, too. It's completely dishonest. It's all the congressmen, it's all the senators, it's your president. They're all on the take, whether it's legally or illegally, whether it's under the table or whether it's right in plain view with legal bribery. Republicans bribe pharmaceutical companies with, after they get the campaign contribution, they give them whatever they want. They bribe defense contractors. They bribe oil companies. Democrats bribe the poor to vote for them. They bribe the lawyers and the bar association. They bribe the environmentalists. And most importantly, they bribe every union in America, including teachers' unions, who are ruining our entire educational system.
Right.
That's legal bribery.
Right.
And you know what? There's going to be a lot of people angry at Wayne Root because I don't want to bribe from anybody. I want to get rid of all that bribery, get rid of all the corporate welfare, and I want to just give it all back, divvy it up, and give it back to the very people who pay the taxes, the taxpayer of this country.
Yeah. Well, just let me take out a second for station identification, which I skipped quarter after the hour, but it's half past the hour now, and time is flying by as we're speaking. This is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host. It's Liberty Talk Radio. Please call if you have any questions or comments, 646-652-4620. You can also send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I'm interviewing now, and it's my pleasure to interview Wayne Allen Root, vice presidential candidate for president, Libertarian Party, and the most dynamic individual in all of the United States. Now, Wayne, how do you stand? How do you stand? What is your opinion of Ron Paul's position in eliminating the Federal Reserve and going back to what he calls honest money, some sort of standard, you know, gold standard or whatever?
Well, to be honest with you, I would say that I'm on Ron Paul's side basically 100% on that issue, but I don't talk about it much. Let me be honest again. Not to offend anyone. Please, don't take offense. I'm on your side. But it's not an issue the average American outside of Ron Paul's circle ever brings up.
Right.
Matter of fact, I've been on 100 radio shows, and nobody has ever brought up the Federal Reserve. But every time I'm on a blog radio show that talks about libertarian politics, they bring it up. There are a few hundred thousand people in this country that care about the Federal Reserve. Nobody else cares. They just want to know how you can change the economy, Wayne Root. How are you going to fix the recession, Wayne Root? They want to know how you're going to lower taxes, Wayne Root. They don't understand the Fed. They don't care. Now, having said that, let me tell you what I really think. There's two ways that you could rip off the taxpayer. One is to steal more of the taxpayer's money. That's called a tax increase. Two is to steal more of the taxpayer's money. That's called the Fed creating an easy money supply, inflating the money supply,
right,
printing more money, and all of our current money and assets then has less value. So, and that's what the Fed has been doing very busily for the last many years, and it's gotten only worse with Bear Stearns and the credit bailout on Wall Street and the housing bailout and the bank bailout. It gets worse every single day, and I believe we do need to go back to a gold standard. So how's that for an answer that should please the Ron Paul crowd?
Okay.
But just let me be honest, the issue has never come up once on a mainstream radio station, ever.
Which subject, which question is asked most often?
I would say number one is what you're going to do about the economy. I would say number two would probably be the immigration issue, I would say is number two. I would say education is probably number three. And I would say energy is number two. I got that wrong. With the gas crisis lately, the last 3 weeks, energy is all I ever get asked about. And then education and then immigration. Those are the issues that come up again and again and again. And believe it or not, the war is dropped down to fifth. You almost never hear a question about the war anymore. It's just dropped off people's radar because they're more worried about how they're paying their rent and bringing bread home for their kids.
Yes, and the war is going to bankrupt us, so we should be worried about it, but it's strange, but that's tomorrow. I think they're worried more about today, right? Is that the problem?
Well, and listen, I bring up the only way I tie the war in is I think everything's tied to the economy. So
right.
I bring up the war and say, listen, the war is tied to the economy. If you want the economy to do better, then I guess you can't spend $1 trillion nation building all around the world.
Right.
You can't gallivant around the world and have gigantic foreign aid all around the world and give away billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, to a foreign tin pot dictators, and you know, Congress can't pass new bills that say we're giving an extra $86 billion in the fight against world hunger and another $100 billion against the fight against AIDS in Africa. What about all the problems in America? We're
right.
giving our money away. And it's not the people who want to give the money away. It's only the politicians who get to play with that money.
Right.
As a great senator once said, a billion here and a billion there, pretty soon you got some real money. And these guys are giving away $86 billion here and $100 billion there for problems around the world that really don't affect us. They have no right to be giving our money away. So, you know, when you talk about war, I don't talk of it in terms of war. I talk in terms of how it's hurting our economy.
Okay, we have a caller. Let's see what our caller has to say. Caller, you're on the air. May I have your first... Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio. May I have your first name and what town you're calling from?
Hello, this is Patricia.
Yes, Patricia.
I'm calling from Tulsa.
Okay, from Tulsa, my hometown. Very good.
My question is, I'd like to know which issue you feel is one which can most strongly attract mainstream America, because, as you know, most people don't have much either information about or interest in the Libertarian Party. And I'd also like to know what your opinion is of the issue of English being designated as an official language for this country.
Well, I think, Patricia, thank you so much for that question. I think there's two things that I've made my niche causes. Number one, I'm a small businessman, and I like to talk about the economy and how it relates to a small business person on Main Street. I love to talk when I get on the air, and people you know, seem to be enjoying it, because when they call in, they say, bravo. I love to talk about how most presidential candidates, most candidates in general, Senate, Congress, they're either career bureaucrats who've never started a business, never created a job, or lifelong politicians who have never started a business, never created a job, or spoiled brats with a gold, you know, born with a golden spoon in their mouth, like George W. Bush, whose daddy opened every door for them. And by the way, that also goes for John F. Kennedy. That also goes for Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was born to the governor of Michigan, who was the former CEO of the fourth biggest auto company in America. These are not people in the real world who understand you and me paying a mortgage every day and worrying about our rent or worrying about our kids going to college, worrying about putting new tires on the car, or whether the business, our small business, will manage to survive this terrible recession. The type of person that runs for office and that runs the Federal Reserve, by the way, that's where I tie in the Federal Reserve, they're out of touch. They don't even know there's a recession. My gosh, every small businessman I know and every small business woman I know knows there's a recession going on, and it's been going on for a year and a half. And yet the Federal Reserve has the nerve to tell us we're not even in a recession yet. They had the nerve to tell us inflation isn't out of control, but any of you go to the grocery store and not think that inflation's out of control? Any of you stop to fill up your gas in your tank and think inflation's not, you know, inflation's under control? They're lying to us. So I like to bring up the economy from the perspective of a small business owner, small business person, and a citizen politician, and that has played very, very well. And the second issue that's played well, of course, is education. I think those are the two issues that matter to Americans, is their pocketbook and also the future of their children. Can their child get a good job someday? Our education system's a horrible mess. I believe education is the civil rights issue of the 21st century, and that, you know, we all as parents have lost our rights to the teachers' unions and the lawyers and the bureaucrats. We're the ones who should be making a decision as to our children's educational future, not a bunch of public school teachers unions that are basically looking to make more money for their teachers but couldn't care less about the kids. And those are the issues that resonate. And as far as your part B of your question, where do I stand on English as an official language, I'm for it because I think it saves money. I'm for anything that makes government more efficient and less expensive, and I'm outraged when I get my ballot and it's, you know, 16 pages long. I just got in Nevada. If the first eight are in English, and then they repeat the whole thing again in Spanish. What does that cost? That's twice as expensive because you print it in Spanish. Well, guess what? English is our language. So we're not printing ballots anymore in Spanish as far as I'm concerned. If we could take power, that ends tomorrow. So I'm with you.
Okay, now, English is the only language is a libertarian issue as well, and the libertarian response to that would be libertarianism is aims to have a free nation, and a free nation anyone can speak whatever language they want, and then no one should be compelled to speak. No one should be compelled. There should be no official language. Now, I do agree with you that in certain, if you have an army, you cannot give orders out in 5 or 6 different or 20 different languages to say charge or fire. You know, so you know you need to have a common language that will be used commonly among all the people for the common good. I mean, that would just make sense, because your ballot was in 2 languages?
2, yeah.
2. Now, see, if we play that game, and I'm going to talk the opposite side of that, I think that was wrong. It should have been in 17 languages, because there are probably 17 languages spoken in Nevada.
Right, but we can't afford 2 or 17. It's right, time to go back to 1. That's
we're back to 1.
I'm very libertarian on the issue, Joe,
okay,
because everyone should have the freedom to speak whatever they want, but I don't have to, as the government official, give them that language on their ballot. That's
right.
All.
No, I agree.
The ballot's in English, and learn it. You know,
that's
I'm a
right.
second-generation
no
American. I have nothing against immigrants. I love immigrants.
Right.
My grandparents came here from Germany as a kid growing up. Guess what language they spoke in the house? German.
Right.
But guess what language they spoke at the office? English.
Right.
And
no.
That's why my grandfather became a successful businessman. He couldn't have spoken German and made it in America, and someone's got to tell people in this country, you can't make it. You're doing a disservice to your children.
Right.
If you don't teach them English, they're not going to make it.
Right. And they didn't have the ballots in German back then, and they didn't have
the
Spanish or Italian.
Exactly.
I was born in an Italian ghetto, and in all the homes, everyone spoke Italian. And
right.
The reason why I never learned Italian is because they didn't want me to understand what they were saying at the time.
Hey, you know, this could be why you and I get along, because you probably don't know this about me. I was born in a little town called Mount Vernon, New York.
Oh, I know Mount Vernon.
Which is on the Bronx borderline.
Oh, absolutely,
and
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, no, I know Mount Vernon well, yes.
Yeah, and Mount Vernon, I was born in a completely Italian neighborhood where everybody spoke Italian in their homes. I happen to be of Jewish origin. I was the only Jew in an all-Italian neighborhood. All my neighbors spoke Italian. All my friends were Italian. And I was knighted an honorary Italian by all my good buddies in school. So, you know, that's probably why we like each other. I've always loved Italian.
Well, you know, I have never had a problem with different ethnic groups at all. I've always been... and I don't know why it is. I mean, I appreciate every ethnic group. I get along with everybody, and everyone has, you know, they categorize every ethnic group, and I think they're all terrific, and I've never had a problem. In fact, when I was in New York, and I know I'm getting way off the subject, just allow me this one liberty, but when I was in New York, I sang doo-wop back in the 50s, and I think we were the very, very first group that had a fully integrated singing group. I mean, it didn't care. I mean, we just got guys together that sang and did well, and we had a great group, and we, you know, there was African-American, there was a Puerto Rican, Italian. I mean, we were a mishmash, and yet that was not cool at that time, you know? But I digress. Well, let me ask you, since you're of Jewish descent, I have a question for you, and this bothers me because I heard Barack Obama the other day said that we must support Israel because we have a special relationship with Israel. Whatever the hell that's supposed to mean, special relationship. Why do we have a special relationship with one particular country and not every country? And do you subscribe to that?
Well, I certainly don't subscribe to it. I'm much more libertarian than most of our politicians. But I got to tell you, again, it's kind of like the Federal Reserve issue, and that a lot of libertarians mention the open borders issue. There are certain third rails of American politics, and it's the reason why you don't get elected. And Americans love Israel. If you look at the polls, it's not Jewish people that love Israel. America loves Israel. It's about 70% or higher in every single poll. Americans support Israel, and they want us to keep supporting Israel, and they don't support the Palestinian cause because they see it as aligned with extreme Islam. And so, you know, it's one of those third rails of American politics. I'm not talking as a Jew. I'm talking as an American that, you know, we share an identity with Israel because they're a land of free people and they believe in democracy. And you could be gay in Israel and nobody would say boo. But if you're gay in Palestine, guess what happens to you? You are stoned and murdered in the street for being gay.
Yeah.
In Iran, the Iranian leader, Ahmadinejad, actually had the nerve to say at Columbia University, We have no gay problem in Iran. There are no gay Iranians.
They're dead.
I mean, you could just laugh this guy off the stage. You know, I mean, and he's probably right. There are no gay Iranians because they've murdered them
right,
all.
Right,
so, you know, we do have a special relationship. We really do. And the reason why is the following. If we want to avoid war in the future like Iraq, which we must avoid, and if we want to avoid a war with Iran, which I do want to avoid, let me make that real clear, as a libertarian, I certainly don't have any interest in any future wars in the Middle East, then I think that one of the important things is we're going to rely on intelligence. And Israel is, ask any general, ask any member of the United States military, ask the intelligence group themselves, anyone in the CIA or the intelligence services of the military, Israel is our only friend and ally in the Middle East who provides us with incredible intelligence. What the heck is going on with amongst our enemies and amongst countries that are hostile to us and amongst many people who want to destroy America? And so I think we need to be careful about, you know, undermining any sort of friendship with Israel, because if we want to avoid war, future wars can be avoided through intelligence, which we'll then use to go after people with special ops and with Navy SEALs instead of with entire, you know, armies and invasions. I think Israel is probably going to be very helpful in the future. That's the only thing I'd say about it. Having said that, I would like to dramatically cut foreign aid all over the world, and I would like to dramatically cut military bases all over the world. Maybe not as extreme as Ron Paul says he wants to cut every military base and all foreign aid. I would just be a little bit careful among some of our best friends in the world, like Israel and Great Britain, not to offend our best friends. But I certainly want to cut it with all of our enemies and all the tin pot dictators, and I certainly can't stand the United Nations. It seems crazy to keep spending money on people that vote against you and make you look like a fool, but Israel's a friend, and I think we do. There's nothing wrong with saying we have a special relationship. We do.
But isn't Saudi Arabia a friend? I mean,
I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
We buy a lot from them, and they buy a lot.
Well,
they buy
from them, yeah. We're their friend. I don't know if they're our friend. I don't think they're our friend. If you look at who bombed the World Trade Center, almost every one of them came from Saudi Arabia. So
right.
I don't know that they're such a friend. But by the way, I'm not out to make enemies with anybody in the world. I want to be friends with everybody in the world. And the best way to encourage friendship, as most libertarians know, is with free trade. So let's trade with our friends and our enemies. Let's make them all friends. Let's
right.
make them all
okay.
dependent on us.
Right.
That's what I say.
All right. I guess I'm a little bit more extreme than that, because I feel that sort of like with the way Ron Paul feels, is that we don't have enemies, but we do a damn good job of making enemies, and by having bases
all over
the world.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, listen, when we stick our nose in things where it doesn't belong, the government makes bad decisions about everything. And the best example domestically is ethanol. You know, they make decisions, and they're always bad.
That's right.
And ethanol was a terrible choice. It was made to help the farmers in the Midwest, the United States. Farmers' organizations and big corporations lobbied for it. And, of course, ethanol has turned out to be a disaster that has not lowered gas prices, causes more pollution than regular gas, and most importantly, created inflation at the grocery store and riots all around the world because of food shortages.
Right.
That's an example of what happens when government gets involved. And the other example is when we pick favorites overseas, very often we make mistakes. We picked Osama bin Laden, made him a buddy against Russia, and then, of course, he turned against us years later. We picked, when the Sunnis fought the Shiites in Iraq, whose side do we take? Well, we took the Shiites. Then it turned out after the fact the Shiites were worse than the Sunni. Maybe we should have stayed out of it altogether. So I completely agree with you. We make a lot of bad choices around the world.
Yeah. My dear mother used to say, you know, when my father used to get all upset about politics, she'd say, "Victor, all I know is if people would only stay home and mind their own business, the world would be a better place." And you know what? That is a wonderful foreign policy, I think. I was always, I thought that was kind of simplistic and all that when I was young, because everything my parents said didn't make sense. But now all this is coming home to roost on me, and it makes a hell of a lot of sense, I'll tell you that. What is your opinion? And this does not really have much to do with the issues at hand, but I'd like to just hear your take on Kucinich's impeachment of George Bush. What's your take on that?
You know, know, Bob Barr has been testifying in Congress the last couple of days, and I think Bob has been a real hero for libertarians around the world. I mean, if you listen to what Bob said, he's sure my hero. I mean, we've never had somebody with the credibility to testify in Congress before,
right.
And he's been testifying about, you know, Bush having taken over executive power and tried to take over the power of the Congress and powers that don't belong to him and trying to say we can vote in a bill, but then the president could say, well, I'll make an exception to that bill. And, of course, you know, Bob Barr believes all of that is a terrible thing. But he didn't weigh in on whether George Bush should be impeached or not. And I think I would stay out of that, too. I don't want to wade into that into that controversial battle. Not my thing. I think, you know, George Bush has made a lot of mistakes. He's angered a lot of people on the right, the left, and libertarian sides.
Right.
And I think overall, all things considered, has been a pretty lousy president. But I don't believe he did anything, you know, that he meant to be terrible. I think everything he did in his heart he thought was right. Doesn't mean it was right. It was wrong. I think wireless wiretaps are wrong. I think the Patriot Act is too extreme. I think he's taken away a lot of rights to the American people. But I think there's a difference, personally, this is me speaking, not Bob Barr, there's a difference between fighting what a man does and fighting for what you believe in and getting your rights back and versus wanting to impeach somebody, which would embarrass the United States all over the world. I think presidents make decisions every day, and some of us disagree with them. If you disagree with them, elect somebody else. Don't try and impeach the guy who's in office. That's all I would say.
Yeah. You know, I'm under the simplified impression, because I'm a simpleton in a way, that probably the easiest job in the world is to be president of the United States if you abide by the Constitution, because basically the federal government has no rights and responsibilities and authority to do absolutely anything. In fact, when the drafters of the Constitution, when they drafted the Constitution, the forefathers, they wrote in the Constitution that the Congress had to meet at least once a year on the second week in December, because they really didn't have any job to do, and that really turned around.
Listen, the thing I would say to that, Joe, is that in Nevada, where I come from, taxes are so low for a reason. And by the way, Nevada's not perfect. Don't let anybody get me wrong. Nevada's not perfect. It's got a lot of problems. The biggest problem is people are moving here in droves from other states, and when they get here, they vote liberal, and they ask for tax increases. So we're becoming a much more liberal state that is going to be very anti-libertarian in the future if we're not careful. But at the moment, it's far better than California. It's far better than New York. It's far better than Barack Obama's Illinois. One of the things that makes it better, along with, you know, the kind of thought you were just saying, is in Nevada, the legislature only meets once every 2 years for 2 months. That's it. And so we have part-time citizen legislators. And what I say is, the less they meet, the better off you are, because that means it's less damage to the American people. Every time a politician meets, they damage us.
Yeah.
And the proof of that is a good friend of mine runs a mutual fund, and it literally found the following. He found the following, but the fund invests based on this fact. It's called the Congressional Effect Fund. And here's what my buddy did. He studied Congress for the last 50 years, and he found any time Congress is in session, the stock market goes up 1.6%. When Congress is not in session, the American stock market goes up 17.6%. Is that amazing? That's the kind of damage politicians do to the American economy every day.
Right.
They don't help us. They damage us. We should make them be citizen politicians and only meet once every 2 years for a couple of months. We should also make them put in term limits, and after a certain amount of time, they absolutely get kicked out of office. And for those who say, well, that's unconstitutional, that's not libertarian, you know what I say? Poppycock. They have a right to serve in one single place for 8 years, and if they want to be career politicians, this is not a communist state. All term limit says is then run for a different office,
right,
or then wait 2 years and then run again.
Right.
But we don't have to, we have no right, you know, there's no right in the Constitution that you have a right to serve forever.
Well,
you just don't have that right. I think we need fresh faces in every 4 to 8 years, and that would eliminate all this earmark and all the pork barrel spending, because it's,
that's,
you know,
right.
The problem is, like in Nevada, our senator is Harry Reid, and he's the Senate Majority Leader, and he's so powerful after all these decades as a big-time
absolutely
politician
right
that he can get anything he wants for the state of Nevada. Well, that's not good. That's bad for the country. It may be good for Nevada, but it's bad for the country.
Right. Exactly.
But if a guy's in office 4 years, he never gets powerful enough to own everybody and to be owned by unions and lawyers and teachers unions, you know, and defense contractors. So I think we limit them in office. I'm a very strong libertarian believer in term limits.
Well, you know, I'm as pure libertarian as you'll ever find, and I feel one term for everyone, and you're out. Go back to work. Go back to your family.
There
and
you
that's
go.
It.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, and I'm as pure libertarian as you can find, and I will subscribe to that. Now, I am curious to what your answer is when people ask you about that number one question, the economy. What are you going to do to turn this thing around? What is your response?
Well, I mean, it comes down to, you know, the Nevada model. Again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but there's got to be a reason why Nevada is the state, I almost said the country, it's the state that has the most population gains in 21 of the last 22 years. And we're number one in America for this year. It was just announced about a month and a half ago, number one again in population growth. Why are people moving here when, by the way, I'm not bragging about Nevada, it's actually quite ugly. Nevada is the desert. It's not pretty compared to the ocean. Why are they running away from the ocean in Los Angeles to come to a place with an ugly tumbleweed going through the air in the desert? Why? And the answer is so simple, because there's no state income tax and no business tax and no inheritance tax. That's what people want. And the answer is, as a politician, Bob Barr and Wayne Root, there's not a lot of things that we can do, but there's a few things we can do if we're not in the majority with libertarians all over Congress and Senate.
Right.
Number one, we can create gridlock. That's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Every time I mention that on talk radio, people love it.
Right. Now, we have another email here, and they want to know where you're going to be appearing. Will you be appearing on TV soon and any talk shows, and that they'd like to follow that?
Well, you know what? I've been telling the Bar people they've got to get up on the website where Wayne's going to be next and where Bob's going to be next. And we're just so busy and so overwhelmed fielding all the calls from the media and creating campaign stops and all the things that we do.
Okay.
And, of course, we're not funded like, you know, John McCain or Barack Obama's funded. We don't have $50 million in the bank every month. So we struggle as a third party to raise serious money.
Yeah.
So we just don't have a gigantic web team, so we just haven't put that up yet. We're going to get it up, I promise you. But the end result is I really don't know where I'm going to be until tomorrow morning when one of the Bar people calls me up and says, you got 4 radio interviews today, and the next one starts in 5 minutes, and you got 6 tomorrow and 8 the day after. And as far as TV, you know, Glenn Beck called about 2 weeks ago and said they want to get me on, but they're not sure what day yet.
Right.
They thought they had a day 2 weeks ago, and then at the last minute it got canceled because there was a big news story, and they wanted, you know, about the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and I got kind of kicked off and moved out of the way for a bigger news story.
Yeah.
But sometime in the next month, I would expect to be on the Glenn Beck show as an example on CNN, because they called me. I didn't call them, so that's good. And I'm sure I'll be on Fox News or Fox Business in the next couple weeks. I'm usually on Fox Business once a month or twice a month. So, you know, there's lots of things upcoming. The best thing I could say is go to my website, Root for America, and I put an announcement up usually the day before whenever I'm going to be on something major. So go to rootforamerica.com, and hopefully in the next month you'll see the same thing at bobbarr2008.com.
Okay, we have about a minute. Maybe we can stretch it to 2 minutes. Are there any closing comments that you'd like to make, Wayne, before we lose our
Well, yeah, you asked me about the economy, and I said gridlock is one thing we could do if we don't have a majority and we're facing Democrat and Republican majorities and we're alone as libertarians. We could say if it isn't authorized by the Constitution, we're going to veto it. And if it raises taxes, we're going to veto it.
Okay.
And if it raises spending, anything more than if the rate of inflation plus the rate of population growth, we're going to veto it. And I think we could dramatically cut waste in the defense budget, and dramatically cut foreign aid, and cut military bases in places like Germany and Japan and South Korea, because they could pay for their own defense. They're rich countries. And I think Bob and I would fight to try and reform, if not end, the war on drugs, because I think we're wasting billions prosecuting victimless crimes. And I think we're ruining people's lives over an issue that should be involved in health and rehabilitation, not in prison. And I think we could cut entire departments like the Department of Education and move all that spending, cut it dramatically, and what's left, move it to the state and local level. That's how we would create a smaller government and create more prosperity for the American people.
Okay, Wayne, we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. It's great hearing from you again. You know, we met on a couple occasions. And by the way, I did see Bob Barr in Oklahoma City last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was.
He's been all over the country, Joe. Yeah. He's doing a great job.
Yeah, and I really appreciate all your efforts. I hope to have you on again. This station may be picked up by two, possibly three networks, which would expand our reach exponentially. At that time, I'll give you a call, and maybe we can have you on again if you have that time, maybe in a couple of months from now. Would that be okay with you?
You know what, Joe? I don't do too much blog talk radio for you, anything, anytime, anywhere. So okay. Just so you know that, anytime you invite me, I will be on.
Oh, by the way, we're not blog talk radio. Is a very small portion of our platform. Actually, we're streaming, so we have a big, pretty big reach. Blog talk radio is our small portion, and there are two actual networks that are picking us up. So it'll be pretty big. So, but I don't want to ask you back until we have that in place and running well, okay? So that you can get the biggest bang for the buck, because I know you're very busy.
Great. Thank you, Joe. But like I said, no matter who is listening, for you, anytime, anywhere.
Thank you so much, Wayne. Thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you. Good night. Bye-bye.
Wow. Wow. Wow, that was Wayne Allen Root. That is great. Wow. Jeez. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. And remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. That's the free life. Folks, embrace it. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, it's warning all of us. It says, don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.